Hello and welcome back to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep minute by minute into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, Zach.
And I'm John.
And we are back for this Wednesday episode. We are talking about minute 112 through 113 of the movie. And when we left our brave protagonist, Paul, yesterday.
Not our hero.
Not our hero, no. Hero? More like hero, no.
God damn it.
When we left Paul yesterday, he was being told to get the fuck out of this temple by the Maker
Keeper. Get the fuck out or I'm going to shoot you.
Yeah. By the Maker Keeper as she's just chilling, probably on her lunch break or something. So she looks like she's in casual clothes, you know? She came
she's
in an
off mid siesta.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Which, hey, by the way, they were onto something with that.
Yeah.
Fucking 2 p.m. nap. Boy, it makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah.
Whew. Corporate America has robbed us of the siesta.
And capitalism has robbed us of the siesta.
True, true. And I'm pissed. I'm pissed about it.
Yeah.
Now, all that to say, I do take a siesta almost every day.
Yeah, same.
Because I work from home.
Yeah, I just block out 15, 20 minutes on my calendar.
Dude, a quick little like power nap's all you need. I feel so good in the rest of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Get into it, people.
Fuck you, 5-hour energy. I'm just going to take a quick little nap.
Yeah. I make my own 5-hour energy. So Paul is looking at this hooded figure, and he goes, I should be welcomed. And I was like, all right, dude, calm down. That's a little cocky. All right.
Well, I mean, what would you expect from a little shitbag rich kid, you know, grew up his whole life being, you know, attended to by everyone?
I don't like this, Paul. I don't like this side of Paul. He can be good. He can be really cool. He can be real chill a lot of times. But when he starts to pull this, I'm better than you, I should be welcomed here bullshit, yeah. I don't like that. I don't care if he's the Nissan Al Gabe or whatever.
Nissan Al Gabe. picture Paul riding on top of a fucking Nissan Altima.
Oh, dude, you know that thing
Atlanta
would
traffic.
You know, Nissan Altima would be perfect out there. Just a dent in every single quarter panel and just trucking it through the desert.
No, there's only one vehicle for Arrakis, and it's the van from A-Team.
That's true. Yeah. Yep. Very, very true. So this hooded figure turns their head slowly, and this is when we fully get to see that it is the Maker Keeper. And she says, if you drink, you shall die. And we kind of cut to the Maker Keeper holding a flask.
It's the same flask that we saw a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, and I thought it was, which led me to a question. Does the Water of Life have a shelf life? Does it expire?
Probably eventually. I don't think it's like honey where it could theoretically just be stable forever.
I agree with you because, you know,
because it would eventually you would eventually evaporate the actual water out of the Water of Life and then just be left with the sediment and, you know, other materials inside where it's just like a powder. Kind of like if you try and evaporate seawater, you just get salt that's left over.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm thinking like, you know, I won't say it most, but a lot of toxins have like a half-life to them, you know, where they just decrease in.
Well, everything has.
Well, I know. Half-life wasn't the right term, but like they decrease in potency over time.
Got it.
So maybe that's kind of what it is. I don't know, but we don't know how long it's been since Jessica was here with the Maker Keeper to now.
We don't know how long it takes for the 20 Thumper ride.
That's true.
You know.
So I'm not sure if this is the same Water of Life. Maybe she whipped up a new batch.
I feel like it's probably the same.
Maybe.
I think what is more realistic is that she just puts like a giant cork on it and then just like puts it in a cool dark corner of the room. You know, that's it. Okay. It's probably like shelf stable for a little bit.
Yeah.
But not long term. This isn't an MRE.
Right.
W-O-L. Water of life flavored MRE.
Yeah. W-O-L-R-E. Walry.
Water of life ready to eat.
Yeah, sure. She continues talking, and she says, if you drink, you may see.
Which is the same line that Jessica was told by Reverend Mother Romalo's attendants as well.
Yeah, that's true. So then she hands Paul a flask of this Faygo Moon Mist Blue. And he just takes a big old gulp.
And we cut to Paul and he's got his fucking ICP, like fucking hell makeup and everything on.
Yeah, he's dropping poop dollars on the ground. I know it goes on. And he drinks it. He just takes
He takes a fucking huge gulp.
Yeah, big gulp, huh? Big gulp.
See you later.
As soon as he takes, so we don't see his eyes when he's lifting the flask up, but when he brings it down, was it just me or did his eyes look a little bit more blue here?
I think it's just the lighting of the scene.
Okay.
Because beforehand, his eyes were still just as blue.
Okay.
It's all right. Just a very dark room, but the eyes are still kind of not glowing, but more obvious.
Okay. I didn't know if they were trying to signal like he drank the water and now he's doing like a shitty Super Saiyan kind of stuff and his eyes get more blue.
One thing that I did notice though is that Paul is not a lightweight and he can definitely sit with his drinks way more than his mom can. Because when Jessica took the water of life, she immediately reacted and started convulsing and shit. Paul and she took just like the tiniest little sip. This motherfucker takes a mouthful and then he's just like, what?
Yeah. No, he looks around and he's like, is something supposed to be happening?
And this water of life ain't shit. Yeah.
And then like taking
and then an something happens.
Well, yeah. Then like taking an edible 45 minutes later, Paul starts tripping balls.
Yeah. And I love this.
It's a very, very good sequence we're about to get into.
So. Timeline for our world. Dune Part 2 came out before Prophecy. So Dune Part 2 laid the foundation for how this whole inside your brain works with the Water of Life.
Yep.
Or in Prophecy's case, the Spice Agony. But I really like how they represent it here in Dune with the flashing faces. Very horror movie-esque with like the strobe lights and the flashing faces and the like cutting in and out and like lack of focus and gaining focus and everything.
Yeah.
And it was hard to tell because I had to like go through frame by frame, but I counted 10 individual faces, but hard to tell if it was different shots of the same couple people. Or if it was 10 unique actors that they had shots of. There were very clearly some like distinct facial shapes and features.
Yeah.
But like some of the shots were like of the left side of the face and some were of the right side of the face. So it's kind of hard to tell. But one thing that I thought was really cool was a fan theory that I saw online a couple months ago on the Dune subreddit. And I don't remember who came up with this, and I apologize for that. But someone had a theory that one of these faces was Tim Blake Nelson, in that Paul could only see the failed Kwisatz Haderach after he had taken the Water of Life. Because the whole thing with like Tim Blake Nelson is that under normal prescience, he couldn't be seen by Paul. or not Tim Blake Nelson, but with
Fenring,
Hasimir Fenring, is that under normal pressures he couldn't be seen by Paul.
Right. That would be.
I don't necessarily agree with that theory.
Yeah.
But it would have been, you know, kind of cool.
Yes.
It kind of goes
against the, you only see the female lineage kind of thing. Sorry, right. I'm getting ahead of you.
No. And that's what I was going to get to, is that I like that theory, but there are definitely some, you know, bigger holes in it and everything. One thing that we do see that is definitive though, is eyes would be bad on all of these people, mm-hmm. and facial tattoos,
yep.
just like Jessica's and just like Romalo's. Right. So we know that these are Reverend Mothers of the past. Now, here's where I'm going to have a potential beef.
Okay.
Not a potential beef. Why is he seeing Fremen Reverend Mothers when the whole point is that you see your maternal ancestral lineage and right. their memories?
Right.
And maybe this is just Brian Herbert is an executive producer on the movie, and this is the ancestral memory that he wanted to portray rather than what Frank and the encyclopedia portray.
Actually, can I be an asshole immediately debunk this?
Yeah.
That goes with Frank's canon.
Does it?
It does. So when Jessica is going through her agony, she sees Romalo's life.
Right.
Because okay. Romalo is sharing that with her. So it doesn't necessarily have to be blood relation.
Okay.
Now, and this is where I'm kind of like, I'm a little fuzzy on these details. But it's said that they're like it's not necessarily an ancestral memory. It's more of just like a cultural memory.
Got it.
That gets passed down.
If only we'll have a guest next week that can help walk us through a lot of these.
We'll get there. Good tease. We'll get there. So I think it's more of just you can see other people, but if I'm going to, you know, play both sides of this little DA here, a little devil's advocacy.
Yeah.
Romalo was in the room with Jessica and physically shared it with her.
They were physically connected because yeah. Romalo was touching Jessica's face and they right. were like holding each other's hands and stuff before Jessica took the water of life. So there is that like physical bond between them. Right. I agree with that. I'm going to chalk this up to Brian Herbert as an executive producer probably has a lot of sway in terms of what decisions are made for these movies to be actually shown. And I think he maybe wanted it to be more Reverend Mother focused. And that falls in line with the way that Denis Villeneuve wants to tell these stories as
true.
Very Bene Gesserit and Reverend Mother focused.
Yeah. And it goes, it plays to telling the audience that the past is being unlocked.
Yeah.
And to really hit us over the head with it, the next line that we hear says, "Now that you can see our past, you can," and that's where we stop. Now, that's where I stopped.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good place to cut them in.
It is. Now, I want to, before we talk about the last shot of this minute, I want to go back to before Paul takes the water of life.
Okay.
Because there's some important stuff with the music and the sound effects that we kind of, in our excitement about this minute, skipped over a little bit, and I want to go back to it. So Paul walks in the room. He's, you know, being a little shit. I should be welcomed. Maker keeper, you know, turns, and we start getting these series of clicks. Three clicks continuously at the same tempo that the thumper goes off on. The dunk, dunk, dunk.
Okay.
Dunk. Dunk, dunk.
But what does it mean?
I don't know. But I just felt like that was a really cool, like, A, increasing the tension.
Sure.
B, B, call back to the thumper moment. Yeah. And C, sets a ground baseline rhythm for the rest of the rising music as Paul is taking the water of life and everything. And I love it because there's also like some really intense chanting that happens and everything.
Oh,
and then it's just, it's a hard cutoff with the fattest 808 that just like has ever hit anyone ever.
Right.
It's that 808 right into the like dream sequence and everything.
Right. Right. And the 808 being a synthesizer hit.
Yeah. It's an 808 bass drop.
Yeah.
Just a boo.
Yep. Yep.
Kind of thing.
Awesome. Awesome stuff. Used in Star Wars a good number of times when they were turning
using
on
a lot of
shit. Well, yeah, a lot of stuff. Yeah. But I think the one that always resonates with me is the turning on of the Death Star beam.
Yep.
When they, the, you just hear that like noise. That is just beautiful.
808's also used in every music production since the fucking machine came out.
Right, right. Super common.
Yeah. No, I mean, there is no more iconic like bass sound, I think, than the 808.
Yep, I agree.
It might have been a 909. I
don't know enough to tell the difference, but I knew it was one of those.
Yeah.
So let's talk about this last scene.
Yeah.
We don't. We're only with it for a couple of seconds.
Maybe
in a couple frames.
An actual couple of seconds.
Yeah. So we get a.
Daytime shot of the desert.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, we as an audience have been trained at this point. Whenever Paul goes through some spice shit, we are probably going to cut to a dream.
And we have the typical like orange-pink hues that kind of rise up from the bottom, and then we see what we want to see, and then the hues rise up again, and then we're back to reality. Oh, there goes gravity.
Right. Thank you. So we see a person walking through the desert. Now, this is presumably Paul, presumably Paul, because
the same hoodie,
that is what we have been trained as an audience to believe.
Yep.
Paul's visions typically include himself or people that are close to him.
Yep.
And a single person, walking in the desert in the same clothes that Paul was just walking in the desert on. We're being led to believe as an audience that this is Paul walking through the desert.
Except there are some wisps of long brown straight hair.
Not wavy.
No, it's straight.
All right.
And Paul has wavy curly hair.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is not Paul. And we don't have the cherry orange, you know, hues rising up from the bottom either.
Right. So we're kind of left on a cliffhanger here.
A little bit.
So we will have to come back tomorrow and see exactly who is walking through the desert. Let's do that.
Yeah. In the meantime, you can find the Dune Minute online. We are on Blue Sky at DuneMinute.com, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch with us. We will be back tomorrow to continue talking about whoever the hell this is. We'll see you then.
See ya.